From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson.
Shots fired now for Cortez and Washtenaw. If you could take a look at that one, Cortez and Washtenaw says they heard five shots in that area.
No, they need help over at 1313 Sacramento, and they need help over at the
It's Saturday, about 1 in the morning on Chicago's south side. Two reporters are driving around monitoring a police scanner. Before long, they catch up with a shooting in progress.
1463, can we just go ahead and 19 Palo shots fired?
38th place.
On this block, about 15 minutes southwest of downtown, residents have gotten used to hearing gunshots.
So I'm looking at Chicago Scanner Twitter feed. Male, 22, shot.
As the paramedics respond, a skinny kid, about 12 years old, kicks a soccer ball next to his building.
I already told the cops that it was a black truck. We're like over there in the yard, and we just hear gunshots.
He makes it sound like it's no big deal. But President Trump has a different view. He's frequently lashed out, calling Chicago a total disaster. Anyone who knows the city understands there's so much more to it than the violence. Chicago Police Chief Eddie Johnson responded to the president's criticism this way on WBEZ Public Radio in December.
It ignores the hard work that the men and women of this department are doing to reduce this violence. And it also ignores the fact that the mayor has given us the resources that we need to reduce violence.
Those resources included more than 1,000 additional police officers. Johnson said more cops on the street helped bring down gun deaths.
We're now 100 homicides down from last year.
100 fewer homicides. Those numbers sound impressive. But are police counting the right thing? If murders are down, why is the violence still leading some people to flee the city while others hunker down to fight for their neighborhoods? Kevin Stark and Darnell Little are journalists with the Data Reporting Lab in Chicago. They spend a lot of time crunching numbers to better understand the issues facing Chicago. As they started digging into how the city tracks violence, they realized officials may be paying attention to the wrong thing. Kevin begins with the story of one man who's experienced gun violence for himself.
I meet up with 36-year-old Lamar Caples in the living room of his bungalow. He says he expected to spend a lot of his life on two wheels. That metallic blue Kawasaki Ninja. He'd ride it full throttle.
Oh, what a rush. It's fun. It's just like everything coming past you is a blur.
Especially on the highway, late at night. Out there, he felt a level of freedom he didn't always enjoy day to day. In the blocks around his childhood home, he constantly kept up his guard to avoid getting caught in somebody else's problem. The kind they'd settle with gunfire.
It was bad, but it wasn't this bad. Can't have a neighborhood store. People are going in there robbing them. Like, it's terrible.
It's a different story for people who live in or visit Chicago's lakefront, the downtown loop and much of the north side, home to major league sports, cultural attractions and entertainment, world-class shopping and dining. People on the city's largely black south and west sides, where Lamar lives, are dealing with decades of bad policy and broken promises rooted in deliberate racial segregation. The interstates cut through their neighborhoods and isolate them from the city that tourists see. Those same highways offer gang-neutral territory to Lamar.
Did I pass as a car? Yeah, the few of us out there, I passed them. State trooper, passed them too. They couldn't catch me. They couldn't catch me.
Eventually, though, bullets did. Twice. The first time, he got hit in the stomach while he was riding in a car. The second, a couple years later, happened outside of a neighborhood restaurant.
Someone came through shooting. I got hit in the back. I was trying to run and, you know, get out the way. And unfortunately, I was one of the ones that got shot. I felt like a feather.
He might have felt weightless, but a scar he rubs on his forehead makes it clear that he hit concrete. A bullet to his back put him in a wheelchair. Lamar says he thinks he recognized at least one of the people who shot him from another neighborhood, but he has no idea why it happened. He was a steelworker, a bulked-up guy who lifted weights after his shift at the mill. He had some brushes with the law, but he says he didn't have to run with a gang.
I wasn't raised that way.
To feel like a target. Chicago is not the large city where you're most likely to get shot and killed. That distinction belongs to St. Louis, with 60 shooting deaths for every 100,000 people. Chicago still leads the pack with about 650 homicides in 2017, more than Los Angeles and New York City combined.
But those numbers don't tell the whole story.
That's my reporting partner, Darnell Little.
The FBI tracks violent crimes and homicides, but it doesn't record how many shootings happen. Local law enforcement does the same thing, so there's no reliable count from police of how many people get shot and survive. But someone does have that information, the Illinois Department of Public Health. We filed a request with that agency, and Kevin and I got a few Excel spreadsheets from them.
Well, I'm looking at two spreadsheets here. We have shootings and homicides. How does this line up with, anecdotally, what you've heard from people in communities on Chicago's south and west side?
So if we look at this spreadsheet for homicides from 1990 to 2015 and make a quick line chart, we can easily see that homicides have significantly dropped over that time period.
And this is essentially the story that we hear from police, that homicides are really high in the 90s and that it's been decreasing over time.
Yes, but let's take a look at shootings. If we go over here to the spreadsheet, that trend line is pretty straight. It's actually even going up slightly.
This is a very different story. This is not the story of a city that has declining gun violence. Shootings are either steady or they're going up.
Right. And so you look at just the homicides and you see one story. You look at the number of people being shot and you see a different story.
The proof was in the billing. The state public health department sent us hospital invoices. They showed at the same time shootings increased in Chicago by 15%, gun homicides dropped by 30%. Even though people are likelier than ever to get shot multiple times with what shooters call RIP bullets, designed to explode inside bodies on impact.
So if more people are getting shot with deadlier ammunition, why is the murder rate dropping?
Darnell stopped by the place that overhauled emergency medicine and changed the game for gunshot victims.
Stroger Hospital is really the nerve center of the trauma system here in Chicago. When you make that 911 call, you're far more likely to encounter an operator in that 911 center who has medical training. We've got 100 firehouses covering the city of Chicago. Every one of those firehouses has paramedics. Our fleet of ambulances are all equipped for advanced life support.
One of those ambulances took Lamar Caples to Stroger after his second shooting. All he remembered was the way he felt.
Bumpy, hurting every time they hit a bump because I was already in pain.
Chicago's chief paramedic, Mary Sheridan, says her crews try to ease that pain way before they deliver a patient to the emergency room.
We can breathe for that patient, and we can circulate his blood with chest compressions, and we can keep him warm and get him to the trauma center where he can go into their operating room right away.
The entire trip, paramedics and the emergency room team at the hospital are communicating with each other and monitoring a patient's vital signs. By doing this, Mary says,
we're buying him 10 or 15 minutes. But with penetrating trauma to the chest or any significant trauma, you are losing blood, you only have 4 to 6 minutes.
4 to 6 minutes. After that, in most cases, it's too late to save your life.
Chicago's trauma centers learn how to act fast from combat medical teams. They visit Stroger Hospital to share best practices and battlefield-tested techniques.
Yes, they do shifts alongside us.
Dr. Farhan Bakari is in charge of trauma and burn surgery at Stroger. He says his team and the military doctors learn from one another. The civilians handle more casualties in their ER than the combat veterans generally do in the field.
There's an amount of severe injury that we see. They don't see that cumulatively. They'll see it during 6 months. A lot of my physicians have been doing this for like a decade. The exposure is much more continuous and extensive here.
Continuous and extensive, because street fights can escalate quickly into shootouts. The Stroger Emergency Room treats, on average, 1,100 gunshot patients a year. It costs a lot to keep them alive. The most recent statistics from the University of Chicago Crime Lab show the city spent $2.5 billion a year on gunshot victims for medical care, lost wages, and reduced productivity. That's an average of $2,500 per household. Without its trauma care system, one criminologist we spoke with says Chicago would still log close to 1,000 gun-related murders a year, higher than the peak of 970 homicides in 1974.
Chicago police wouldn't talk to us about what we found, but we did speak with Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle. Cook is the county that includes Chicago. It controls Stroger Hospital. I told Tony what our research had found.
If we're getting a lot better at treating gunshot trauma and people are surviving, that's your point, then it's not really the murder rate, but the shootings that we ought to be looking at, the number of shootings. I see your point. In a way, the world-class nature of our trauma care masks, to some extent, the problem.
Do you see a solution there?
We can't just look at the murders and the shootings. We have to look at the communities out of which these folks come and see what we can do to address the challenges that the communities face. Otherwise, they will just continue to produce at-risk young people. And, I think you're well aware that the people who are at risk for being shot are the same people who are at risk for being shooters.
That could have been Lamar.
When I got shot, it was like, oh, I'm ready to kill now. But I know better than that now. I calm down, realize, I got a lot to live for, and that's not for me. It's not for me at all. So I'm not gonna let my situation turn me into a bad person.
Lamar gets by. Disability benefits and money his former coworkers at the steel mill raised for him help. Health insurance covered some of the medical costs, but he's still got a lifetime of bills to pay. His family and fiance pitch in too. When he thinks about his future, he says he'd like to work with other gunshot survivors.
People that feel like there's no hope for them, even if they're in the chair for the rest of their life, I would still like to be there to laugh with them, still to encourage them in the things that they may think is too hard for them to do. Let them know my situation. Let them know how much God bless me.
Lamar says sometimes he feels his legs again. He prays a lot, lifts weights at home, and three times a week, he goes to the gym.
Kevin Stark and Darnell Little of the Data Reporting Lab in Chicago brought us that story. Here's the big questions that got them started. Would it matter at all if officials focused on how many people get shot instead of how many die? Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Commission president, told us that could change the way local government budgets its money.
We need to be sure that those young people who have been shot the first time don't find themselves at risk or put themselves at risk to be shot again. And that's a holistic approach to their recovery, not just physically from the wound, but from all of the factors that led them to be a gunshot victim in the first place.
Like 25 Chicagoans during this year's Martin Luther King holiday weekend.